It started with a whisper in Jamaica and became a roar across continents. From Harlem to Lagos, Kingston to Panama, over 6 million black people joined a movement the world tried to ignore until it was everywhere. The UNIA wasn't a moment. It was a machine, a Pan-African engine fueled by dock workers, preachers, seamstresses, and soldiers, all united under one flag, red for blood, black for people, green for land. With secret newspapers smuggled in sugar sacks, with barbershops as headquarters, with parades that rivaled any empire's army. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. A global movement, UNIA's explosive growth. What began in a room became a roar across oceans. By the time most empires began to recognize the UNIA as a legitimate threat, it was already too late. They had laughed at it, dismissed it, scoffed at its red, black, and green banners, its uniforms, its African legions, its paper currencies, and parades. To colonial governors, it was a loud but harmless spectacle. But within 5 years of its founding, the UNIA had become the largest black-led movement in modern recorded history, claiming more than 6 million members and over 1,100 branches across 43 countries. This was not a rumor. This was a revolution in slow motion, building not on bullets, but belief. The geography of a movement. To understand the UNIA's power, you must understand its reach. This wasn't just a Harlem story. It wasn't just a Jamaican or American phenomenon. It was everywhere the African diaspora had been scattered, in the ashes of plantations, in ports, in slums, in cities rising under European flags. By the 1920s, UNIA divisions could be found in North America, New York, Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, New Orleans, Toronto, Nova Scotia, Caribbean, Kingston, Port of Spain, Bridgetown, Nassau, Port-au-Prince, St. Thomas, Central America, Panama City, Cologne, Limon, Costa Rica, Bluefields, Nicaragua, South America, Georgetown, Guyana, Paramaribo, Suriname, Africa, Lagos, Accra, Freetown, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Monrovia, Europe, London, Liverpool, Paris, Oceania, even tiny delegations in Australia and New Zealand. Everywhere black people were, from enslaved descendants in Brazil to port workers in Sierra Leone, the UNIA gave them structure, identity, and a mission. How did it grow so fast? It wasn't magic. It was method. Print media mastery. The UNIA published the Negro World, a multilingual newspaper that was banned in over a dozen colonial territories, which only made it more desired. Smuggled in sugar sacks, stashed in Bibles, or sewn into clothing, it reached 500,000 readers weekly in English, Spanish, and French. Local chapters with central vision. Each UNIA branch operated semi-autonomously, running its own meetings, businesses, parades, and even courts, but stayed loyal to a central charter and ideology. Pageantry and pride. Garvey understood spectacle. The African legions marched in uniform. Women wore sashes of rank. Parades were held with trumpets, banners, and drums, rivaling military ceremonies of colonial rulers. Accessibility for the poor. Membership dues were modest. Anyone could join. No degree required. No wealthy sponsor needed. All you needed was belief in black sovereignty, the power of a nation in exile. Unlike other political organizations, the UNIA offered a complete vision, a government in waiting. People weren't just joining a cause, they were becoming citizens of a future black empire. The role of ports, churches, and barbershops. UNIA's expansion strategy was smart. They didn't need skyscrapers or TV ads. They needed people, and they met them where they lived. Ports and shipping docks were crucial. Black sailors carried copies of the Negro World to every country they docked in. Churches served as meeting halls where liberation theology merged with black nationalism. Barbershops were the street corner universities, spaces of strategy and storytelling, where membership could be recruited and propaganda spread over the sound of razors and laughter. It wasn't just a movement. It was a rumor of freedom, passed from hand to hand, whispered in code, shouted in rallies. UNIA conventions, black globalism in action. Every year, the UNIA held massive international conventions. The most famous was in 1920, in Harlem. Over 25,000 black delegates from across the globe attended, traveling by ship, train, and carriage, dressed in regal garb, marching under one flag, chanting one slogan: Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. At the Liberty Hall, located at 114 West 138th Street in Harlem, the movement's global command center. They passed resolutions, published manifestos, issued diplomatic appointments, and structured Black nationhood in exile. From the balconies, Caribbean women read revolutionary poems. On the floor, African veterans debated land policy and trade. In the aisles, vendors sold pamphlets, buttons, and fabrics dyed in red, black, and green. It was pan-African democracy before any African nation was free. Banned by colonies, feared by governments. The British banned the Negro world from Trinidad, Nigeria, Sierra Leone, and Kenya. French colonies intercepted UNIA letters. The US began spying on every delegate traveling into Harlem for UNIA conventions. Why? Because the UNIA wasn't just calling for better treatment. It was calling for the end of white imperial rule. In one stroke, it undermined colonial loyalty, delegitimized missionary propaganda, gave Black soldiers an alternative allegiance, reawakened ancestral pride that had been strategically erased. It was a psychological jailbreak, and the wardens panicked. Membership by the millions, but not just numbers. The 6 million members were not passive. They were active organizers. They built UNIA-run schools, credit unions, farms, bakeries, and newspapers, created burial societies and healthcare systems, hosted military drills, debate nights, and African culture festivals. In many ways, the UNIA was what post-colonial African states would one day try to be, but in the 1920s. It was ahead of its time, and because of that, it was hunted relentlessly. Closing reflection, when the dispersed became a nation. Imagine this. A descendant of enslaved Africans in Mississippi is reading the same newspaper as a post-slavery child in Nairobi, while a dock worker in Belize wears the same sash as a teacher in Trinidad. They do not know each other. They do not speak the same dialect, but they are citizens of the same imagined Black nation, loyal to a flag born of survival, a future born of memory. That's what the UNIA achieved. It took a people scattered by conquest and gave them one direction, forward.